every mind, you have to place principles before the scouts.
I'd like to thank everyone for reading. Tonight we have two speakers who've come from a long way to speak here, and what I would like to do is let them introduce one another. So you can introduce Bob. Bob, introduce you, and you can take.
My name is Greg. I'm an addict.
And you're Greg.
And I'll be glad to introduce Bob. Bob is one of the people that was there for me when I came around to NA and made a decision to change the way I was living. He's one of the people that would take the time to stick in after me and talk in the parking lot and teach me about how to live a new way. I'm real privileged that Bob has been a friend of mine for over 20 years now. And our relationship, and the other relationships we have in this program, that's one of the real special things, are so much better than any relationships I ever knew before. They don't disappear when you move cross-country, because we live on the West Coast and the East Coast, basically. And the relationship is still there. It's still strong. I'll give you a bump.
I don't know where to begin. My name is Bob, and I'm an addict.
Hey, Bob.
Yeah, I have very few. No, I have a lot of over 20-year relationships now. But I didn't have. In fact, this 20-minute relationship was good for a while. And that was only as far as I could cop. How far can I get some money, and can I get it and then go? That was with my relationship for a long year, a lot of years. I was just thinking, I was just kind of looking at the facility here, you know, it's such an opportunity, you know, to say come long distance or far place and say, and addicts have arrived to a place where they at once or finally found out to say, Alex have an illness that can be treated. For a lot of years that was not so. And I'm going to think about relating to the years that I used drugs, and it was always a case of everybody looking down their nose at you in terms of saying that you were some kind of moral leper, you know. You were a nobody. They had names that they wouldn't print even, you know, as far as addicts were concerned. Because it became that issue and they had no answers. And I think that was one of the problems for a lot of years about my own drug addiction. I felt that I was hopeless because I had been told that I was hopeless. I was one of these people that probably for a lot of years, I used to think of myself as a hope to die. And I carried that around as a flag that, you know, like I hope to die, you know. As far as addicts were concerned, you know, I got caught up in addiction not as early as they are now, because I think it's more liberal in terms of that's the way, that's the lifestyle of today. During the period of time that I grew up, let's say, which will date me, I grew up during the 30s and 40s. I used my first drug in 1945, so you can see it was, it's been a long time ago, you know, and drug addiction, as far as drug addiction is concerned, drug addiction has not changed. Maybe the lifestyles have changed, the drugs that they use have changed, the attitudes have changed, and it took a long time for that change to come about. And it has a lot to do with, very often, it's a, if you can look around you, there's not a whole lot of old addicts around you. If that would give you any hint to where your addiction will carry you, look around you and see how many old addicts are around you. They don't last long. But that's kind of an overview, and I think it's one of the things that happens in the process. We learn something about our own addiction. And one of the things of today, at least they talk about addiction. They talk about places for recovery. They have some tools for recovery. And the more very effective tools, because of people have stayed around and proving that this here program works over and over and for long terms. As Greg has said, you know, like over 20 years I've known Greg, been clean and been active and been involved. I first came around this program in Narcotics Anonymous in 1959. Now, I didn't stay clean from 1959, but 2 years later, I arrived back here at Narcotics Anonymous because they gave me the tools. When I first came around, I used to stick this pamphlet off, it's talking about looking at the book. I used to stick a pamphlet off my back pocket, take it to jail with me, take it everywhere with me, read it, write notes on it, make all kind of promises to myself, and took addresses down, and it was written all over and scribbled and doodled and everything. And that was my, you know, like, to pretend, because I wasn't ready to clean up. See, when I got to Narcotics Anonymous, I had played all the games necessary to get here. And it took me a while after being first introduced to Narcotics Anonymous to really understand that I could not do it my way. I was hopeless. My way was hopeless. And one of the things is, I think in rooms like this here, they give us the tools to work with. Now, after you've been given the tools, you can say what you want to, but the responsibility is yours, what you do with it. Nobody can do it for you. See, I came to Narcotics Anonymous and I wanted them to fix all my life problems. And I had many. See, because when they would ask me about having a problem or why was I an addict, I had a list of shit, you know, that I used to lay on. See? Because I was born in the wrong time, from a broken family. I've been hit in the head and kicked in the ass and they mistreated me. And hey, I had a list on, you know. It was a list that was well-founded in terms of that's what they understood what addiction was about. And I fitted all the categories. Since I was, they said, it was hopeless for addicts to recover, I took on that one too. But addiction is of such nature that, you know, my addiction got to the place where it always got worse. And I never could understand why it always got worse and never better. Even on my brightest moments when I think things were going uphill, my boat's going to come in, or I got the stash, or whatever the case is, when things look like they are right, you know, I was still going downhill. The progression of the disease I knew nothing about. Fact is, I knew very little about the disease of addiction, my own or anybody else's, and I had nobody to go to that I could ask the question as to, what is this thing I got? You know? I'd used heroin for a whole year and didn't know what hook was. And my partners had to tell me, in fact, there were some partners out of this area, this part of the country too, New York, that told me, well, you hook. And I said, what's that? I said, we've been using every day. I said, so? You hook. You know, I would learn some valuable lessons in the process. And one of them, don't get too far from the connection, was a very important thing I had learned. You know. You just don't give it off and just walk away, okay? Because you're going to get sick. And I didn't like getting sick. So I learned all the worlds of substitution. You know, if one thing's not available, you use something else. That'll hold you over until you get back to your main thing. You know, become a very simple process, you know. Mix and match, you know, until you come up with what you need. But this disease, you know, the forerunner to this disease is many other things. It's not the using. That's my problem. The using was not my problem. See, I had built a character because my vision of what life was about was distorted. See, I had some preconceived idea what it should all be about. So I had very little communication skills with, not only talking, no, I had good communication skills with my fellows, but people that knew what life was about. See, I didn't have no communication at home because it was always shut up, sit down, listen. Don't ask me, do what I tell you to do. Mom whipped everything into shape anyhow. That's how she controlled things. It was very little conversation as to what I felt. How do you feel about it? They were always telling me how it was supposed to feel anyhow. If something's seemingly decent or something going on, aren't you happy? Aren't you sad? No, I was usually something else. I was off somewhere else. You know, and I lived in fantasy in my head most of the time. I always had some vision as to how it's supposed to be or how I thought it's supposed to be and how things were supposed to be in any living situation. Or I was comparing notes in something I read or something I heard or something I'd seen. It looked ideal. Role models were. Joker standing on the corner under the bright lights with two or three ladies talking shit. My role model. You know, looked like good to me. He seemed to be the only one in my neighborhood having fun. The rest of them weren't having no fun. They coming in, you know, and they groveling and going on. They trying to make a living and trying to take care of a family. And they seem to be with a frown on their face most of the time. And they seem to be hurting and what have you. And I didn't want to be like them. Yeah. So it was always a kind of a thing that's kind of the idealistic situation I wanted to be. Or that's the kind of household I would like to be come from. Or I'd like to have a dad like him. Or a mother like her. Or whatever. I was always on a trip. I was one of these kids who was very needy and not satisfied, but in given the time, any place I was not satisfied. It was always better over there. So I lived a lot in my head of I was going to be or become all of those things that I had read about or seen somewhere else. Lived in fantasy land. That was my dream, to live in fantasy land. So in some ways, I was always running away in some ways. Whether I was running away in time of a consciousness or running away physically. My first opportunity to run away, I joined the service. And it was a whole process there of joining the service, going out to be man. Now, I had no, my men, they don't do a lot of standing on the corner in the military. You know, so I got to find some other men figures, you know, these, and hey, we'll go out and kick ass, you know, take names. And at the end of the day, let's have some fun. And going out having fun was an exercise of who got it, let's get it. It was just that simple. That seemed to be the culmination of a day. At the end of the day, let's get loaded. Let's go have some good time. To not remember the good time we had the next day. You know, always ask the credit, what happened last night, baby? Boy, we sure had a good time. You know. Well, what happened? Yeah. And I was always kind of like in a dilemma, like, what happened? We were supposed to have a good time, right? Before the nod out or the fall out, you'd have all that a good time, because we all started out to have a good time. You just never remembered having a good time. So I spent a lot of time doing that, and it said my disease was progressing at such a rate that I felt that I had control, because I stayed in the military a long time, and I used to travel a lot, and I went to a lot of different places, and I had no problems about using any of the places I went. Addicts have a language of their own. They can communicate in the darkest of Africa or down in the North Pole. Don't make no difference. They know how to communicate. They know how to find drugs, too. They will find, if there isn't any addicts or drugs to be had, they'll find them. I had no problem about finding drugs. I knew where to go. I knew the method or means in order to get there to take care of the business at hand, to get loaded. Under the most adverse conditions you could imagine, I got loaded. I had no language problem. Wherever I went, and I come to find out, addicts all over the world same. They do the same shit all over the world. Yeah? So I had no problems about using the progression and keeping this disease going. And for a lot of years, I like to think that, you know, I was holding my own, I'm holding my mud, and I'm taking care of business. I'm functioning to some degree, some higher, you know, high degree, and sometime a low degree, or not functioning at all. And it gets to a place where when you stop functioning at all, people get to looking at you. Say, you got a problem. And I told them, they just leave me alone, I don't have no problem. Just let me steal your shit, and let me go buy my stuff, and let me get my head back, I'll be okay. But they seem never to cooperate in that matter. They're always interfering. You know, intervening. Why aren't you here? And they, you know, get on your case and they're talking bad to you and everything, you know, and you get uptight, you know, so you got to use some more not to be uptight. Because anytime I got upset, you know, I go fix it. Automatically, you know, I fix that. You know, I don't feel bad. Don't feel nothing. That was always my objective, not to feel nothing. So I spent a lot of years, you know, not feeling, because I thought that was supposed to be position of man anyhow. You know, said you're supposed to be one of those gung-ho or right fellas or whatever the case is. But you're not feeling the joy that I seemingly other people are feeling, or what they said I was supposed to get out of this drug. I'm not getting what I'm supposed to be getting out. This non-feeling is okay, but it's not satisfying. It's not gratifying. It's leaving me incapable of dealing with life on life's terms. is reached that proportion that all things are going away. Okay? And you find yourself like on an island or in isolation some kind of way. Nobody wanting to talk to you, you know. The difficulties of getting drugs become more painful, more difficult. Your ability to tell lies and to function and to justify your action is becoming nil. Then they start locking you up and putting you away in jail and giving you time to think about these here things that you have done. And during that time, that's where their rehab and their detoxes were county jail. They didn't have hospitals and rehabs and so they say, hey, that's where you kick it, baby. You know, that's where you go. And you get tired and they just wear you out. You know, you never know how did you know. They say they come down the street and gaff me up there, you know, in a crowd of people, and they pick me out of a crowd and take me to jail. And they usually got me dirty. And I never could understand it. I understand it today, but I couldn't understand it, you know. What you messing with me for? You know, I ain't doing nothing but standing on this corner. Right? Well, I'm just walking down this street. But I'd have made some bogus move along the way somewhere, you know. I'd have cop or tried to sell or whatever, or run off something. Whatever the case is, I was usually dirty or guilty. But that gets old. Gets old and you get tired. You really get tired of that madness, you know. We run through a lot of people's lives in the process. How I got to Narcotics Anonymous, I ran through a number, and I always had a mama somewhere, you know. It was always a case of somebody take care of me. Please, baby, take care of me, you know. And we beg good, you know. You know we know how to beg, shit. We get in the doors of anybody's place, you know. If they listen long enough, we got a story to tell, you know. And make them feel real guilty about not helping. Yeah. So we usually find somebody. If it's not your maternal mother, you find some other mother. It don't make no difference. Okay? Any mother will do. Just like any port in the storm, same thing. Any mother will do. Yeah. And how I got to Narcotics was through one of these here sessions. You know, like I'm going to help you get your shit together. Yeah. Hey. But we got to get married. I don't know why she figured paper was going to help. You know, but. That's her, so be it, you know. And I'm in jail anyhow when she makes this plea, right? So what I'm going to do is say, I do. Huh? I ain't got nothing to win or lose or draw. I ain't got nothing. You know, ain't got nothing to offer, really, but me. And if she wants that, great. Huh? Go pay the bail, baby, and let's do the thing. You know. But in the process, what happens is we run through enough people's lives, they keep telling them that we got a problem and we're going to help you, and they keep putting things in front of you and saying, you better go over here and check this out, you go over here and check this out, you better talk to these people. So she was about to go crazy. Before they locked her up, she asked for help. Right? And in her asking for help, somebody told her something about a thing called Narcotics Anonymous. Now, lo and behold, you know, one meeting in the world, she finds it. I sent her to the meeting to check it out. Oh, you have to realize, 1959, they frowned on addicts. They didn't talk about no addicts, you know, unless it was in derogatory terms, period. Well, you always had to send some scout out to check out things for you, you know. Go check it out, man, you know. If you don't know nothing about that, you know, the Narcotics, I didn't know what anonymous would mean anyhow, you know, shit. And you talk about Narcotics Anonymous, I definitely, you know, like that's strange language. Well, that was, you know, and you're going to strange places and to another strange town to look at it, you know. No, I can't. No. I wasn't ready to clean up in. It was her idea. Wasn't mine. You know, so the process was, you know, how sharp we are at times. We say, okay, we get to the place where in order to appease our other, we get to the place where, okay, I'll check it out. I'll go over here and see what it's about. Yeah. And I walked in the room of Narcotics Anonymous, and there was about 10 or 12 people sitting around the table talking out of this book. You know, it was all lined out and everything, recovering and who got a problem, who's got a hot. Bob always had a problem. I came there with a problem. My problem was, can you fix it? I needed my license back. I needed me a new old lady. I needed money. I needed a car. I needed it, fix me. And that's all you told me, to keep coming back. And I didn't know my problem was far beyond, you know, what I was using, and I had no problem with alcohol, right? So I'd get loose before I got there. Huh? I'd knock off a sharp dog, about half of a sharp dog before I got there, you know. I'd get fluid, you know, my mouth get the flapping, you know. Well, I found, as long as I was talking, I didn't have to listen. Huh? And so I would sometimes disturb the meetings because I just go, well, y'all ain't talking about to do now. I need a job. I need this. I'm going to get license. Keep coming back. So one of the things that happened, though, you know, as you say, you hear the steps, you read the steps. Now you must do the steps. Huh? Isn't that it? I think that's the order it goes. You know. But what happened with me, you know, I'm so sharp. If you're an addict like myself, you get so sharp, you know all words, all games, and all things. Hmm? Oh, we slick, you know, we cool. We cool, yeah. And even that we can read words don't mean that we understand what we're reading. Because I used to read the steps. Who wanted to read the steps? Bob would read the steps for me. Because when I went home to talk to my old lady, she said, what happened at the meeting? I told her I worked the steps. What happened to me, Mom? I worked steps wrong. I didn't even understand steps. I couldn't get past the first step. Because I knew nothing about the word. One word, you know, just kind of blew it all out of proportion. Because I used to come to me and tell me, no, oh, dope thing. Yeah, my life's unmanned, but shit. So what? Yeah. Dope thing. But that's not what the first step said. So I must come to some understanding as to what addiction is about. Because that's what I'm really powerless over. And addiction is not something over there somewhere that's been draped on me. See? It's the whole sum total of my whole being and my whole action is what is the addiction. Me. Now what am I going to do about it? And it becomes a long journey as to what you do about it. You have to make the decision to surrender. And sometimes it's very difficult to surrender to somebody else's ideas and follow direction. We don't like to follow. If you like me, I had great difficulty in following direction. All the time I was in the military, I had problems with direction. I could say, yes, sir, and I'm going to do it my way. Hmm? They thought I was going to carry it down to the law, you know, yes, sir, and I'd go take off and do it my way. I was always doing that. Mom used to tell me the same way. I used to get many an ass whipping, you know. She tell me to do it one way, and I do it my way anyhow. Didn't I tell you? So I always had to suffer the consequences. But I had to do it my way. And it's the same thing about me doing the steps. You know, it got to the place where I got to, people had to explain to me what the steps were about. Then when I become willing to do what they were suggested to not condemn, because I always had contempt prior to investigation most of the time. It's okay for you, Charlie, but not for me. Or that don't apply. Okay, I can accept that one, but not that one. See, this step is a very exacting formula that works very exacting in the process of doing what is suggested. Very exacting formula. I used to call it my recipe for living. Because that's how people had to draw it up. They had to make it real plain for me. Regardless of how philosophical I could become, or how wordy or intellectual I could become, they had to make it real simple for me. Hmm? They had to make it down to drawing letters and on the wall and making comparison and parables and all this stuff. Okay, Bob, okay, hold it just a minute. Let me draw a picture for you, you know. Let me show you how it works. Hmm? And one of the things that one of the preachers used to say is a very exacting recipe. Now take Betty Crocker cake recipe on the back of the box. Got it? You go to the store, right? You get the recipe and you follow it precisely and you get a cake. Huh? Steps work the same way. And you don't have to believe in them. And they still work. Don't give a shit whether you believe in them or not. If you're willing to do what is suggested, you get a result. Huh? Now, you know, I didn't immediately take that up and say, all right, I got it. All right, shit, you know. I still want to do it my way. Because I'm one of them people, even if at you're talking about taking the recipe, I want to throw something out, or that don't, hey, I can make it better by leaving the eggs out of this one, shit, or the butter, or the cheese, or whatever. I want to do it my way. Then when I get a mess, I want to blame it on the recipe. Right? Then I found out, they said, if you mix the ingredients as prescribed, or as directed, most of the time, you get a good result. And you don't even have to believe it. That's amazing. And that's the way the steps work. Because my first venture at working the steps, I sort of told my sponsor and a few others, okay, I'm going to work just to show you my case is different. I'm going to do just what you told me to do to prove to you that my case is different. And lo and behold, in the process, I started finding a transition that took place within me that I did not understand. They told me, you don't have to understand it. Do you feel better? Are better things happening? And they were. So that was kind of proof in, you know, like, wow, that's all right. Shit. Huh, I better check this out again. Oh, shit. I don't know how I'm doing that sooner or something. Shit, I ain't got money in my pocket. I'm driving a car. I got my license back. Old lady not talking shit no more. Huh? Yeah, try this mother again. You know, try it some again. You know, or try it some more or complete the process. And as a result of doing that over a period of years, I found out some total of my life has gotten better, increasingly better. Bottom line. And it has nothing to do about me becoming a millionaire or a pauper or none of those things. It's what I feel within me and the things that are happening within me, the things that I can accept as far as life is concerned. You know, the things that I used to have great problems in. And it doesn't mean that I'm well today. It means that I'm better than I used to be. That's all. And that's good. See, and that's what I'm looking for, is making progress in this process. So we stay here and we continue this process and start feeling better about ourselves, and we become important to us, our own self. We start treating ourselves better. When we start thinking better of ourselves, we start treating ourselves better. So I've been a lot of years trying to kill me. Now I don't want you or nobody else trying to kill me now. But I'm just getting ready to live. I said, I just want to know why I didn't start soon. So I wasted a lot of time. I could have been steady. Oh, boy, I figured I could be bugging now. Shit, you know, about this time, I should have been, you know, done. My life's work should have been, you know, started or finished or something, you know. And I don't think I got enough time. I don't know where I think time is going, but I have a problem with, you know, like, years moving. You know, shit, moving, hey. See, I've been around this camp here, you know, clean, you know, and not using anything over 31 years. So that means I had to get a year older each year, right? Got that? So you get difficulty with those things, you know, like, is it getting by me, you know, am I losing it? you know, age tell you a lot of things, but that's natural processing, you know. I have to realize that, whether you like it or not, is it acceptable? You know, you get to the place where you accept where you are, what's happening, what life's about. So if you have not tried the 12 steps or whatever exercise you'd like to try it on, at least one time, it's a short exercise. 12 steps, right? And I know many of you, if you're like me, that's not enough. And it should be a very short exercise. Do 12 steps, right? Shit, do 12 steps. And find out what happens. And if I'm lying to you, come tell me I'm lying to you. It's okay, I don't mind. Hey, I've been a liar before. Shit, I used to lie a lot too. Yeah, so that don't make no difference. But at least one time, try the 12 steps in your life and find out what the results will be. Not because I told you anything or someone else told you anything. See what it does for you. Because that's what part of the proof is to find out something work is a process of it working for you. Like somebody telling you something, whatever your drug was, talking about, boy, this is some good shit. You don't want to hear that. Now, if you're out there, you don't want to hear that. Talking about, give me some, let me check it. That's all my response. Don't tell me about how good it is. Give me some, let me check it out. Then I'll tell you if it's good. That's the same thing to 12 step. Don't let me tell you, you know, because I might be jiving, you know. But I stayed around here to find out to see if they were jiving or not. If that's what it is, if you stay around long enough, you'll get something okay for you. And that's what it's about. Yeah, I said, in my journeys, he said, we come across many people. And one of the people we come across, he said, those that help us in our recovery because they have a certain lack of communication and involvement, and we learn how to become friends to one another, not associates as we have in the past. And we kind of nurture that friendship over a period of time where we share things like brothers or like family. We become family. I have a greater rapport with the family I have in Narcotics Anonymous than I do with my real family. Because they don't understand. And I can't convince them to understand. They try. You know, they're glad to see me doing whatever I'm doing. But we don't have the closeness. We don't have the communication. They're unable to. They don't have my problem of addiction or the need to talk about what's going on with them. The illness is still there. It's deep-seated in our family. Deep-seated. Long before my immediate family is deep-seated. And I think very part of the comparison is, you say we learn from each other. Greg, you know, in our process, we've got to know each other. We got to know his family. We got to know the people that he grew up with, so to speak. And we come very close and intimate in that respect. We spent a lot of time together. We shared, broke bread, so to speak, and shared meal. Fact is, he kicked the meal tonight, and I ate. You know, it was good. And so, you know, we have a lot of sharing that goes on in this thing called recovery. It's not all just one side or isolation. And so I'll give you Greg and let him talk. Thank you.
My name's Greg. I'm an addict.
Hey, Greg.
I'm glad to be here, too. You know, Bob, you used to have a funnier way of talking about that. Steps, yeah. There. The first thing I remember Bob saying is, it says you take the steps just like using castor oil. If you take enough of that stuff, the results are automatic. And I believed it. You know, I believed it. I believed it was true about the steps, too. This is a program about the therapeutic value of one addict helping another, and I think that's the basis of our relationship. You know, because if it wasn't for Bob and for other people like him, when I stumbled around in 1970, I wouldn't be here today. And if it wasn't for people like me stumbling around, and you stumbling around for me, then I wouldn't make it, or he wouldn't make it. Without each other, we can't do this thing. You know, and that's one of the big lessons for me. The story of my using is not as glamorous as Bob's. I'm sorry, but I just started using it by prescription when I was 6, 7, 8 years old. And some diet pills. And by the time I was 10 years old, I was taking uppers, downers, and tranquilizers daily. By the time I was in high school, I was starting to use some other drugs. And I used as much as I could, as long as I could. And I started looking for help when it all fell apart. You know, I did not come to Narcotics Anonymous because everything was going good in my life. You know, I'm not one of these people that dreamed about being an addict and, you know, that's what I want to be when I grow up. That's not what I wanted to be when I grow up. It was go to hell and turn left. There's NA. You know, it wasn't about my life being good. It was about the realization that I could no longer continue to live the way I was living. And I started coming around NA. I started coming to meetings. Even before that, I started calling, looking for help. And I finally stumbled into an NA meeting. And I've been here basically ever since. I used a couple of times after I first came around, within the first 2 weeks. And since then, I've been here. And I've made the friends, and I've tried to do the things that it seems we all do. I mean, I don't know why I'm still here. Yeah, I do know why I'm still here. I'm still here because I didn't use nothing, no matter what. I had a handy-dandy one-step program when I came around. It says you don't use nothing no matter what, even if your ass falls off. And if it does, you pick it up and put it in a brown paper bag and take it to a meeting. You just don't use. You know, that was my program. You know, you do the next right thing. Stay clean and act right. Simple program. I had to... that I didn't realize is that addiction has nothing to do with rationale. It's not rational. It doesn't care about me. It doesn't think out right. No. Addiction is a disease that I have. I can't figure it out. I believe that we have a threefold disease. I believe in the disease concept. Stuff that you're probably getting in lectures and all kinds of stuff like that. You know, I really believe in some of that stuff, because even in my own experience before any of that, the tests were run on people and they were looking at the neurotransmitters and all that stuff, before any of that stuff, you know, we talked about, you know, well, we have a disease. Somehow the drugs act differently. Somehow we have a tendency to get strung out on anything. Somehow we struggle with faith and hope and trust and relating to others as equals and things like that. You know, there's something about us that makes it impossible for us to live and enjoy life as other people do. And our literature goes on, you know, and says we found the answer in drugs in one form or another. You know, it talks to us. It talks to me. And I knew that. I knew that before any of the research came out. I knew that before any of the testing. And I was taught that by people like Bob. When I came around to NA, I went through pretty much what everybody went through. I can imagine some of you going around, and I see some white key tags here, and that's wonderful. They didn't used to give white key tags. I remember it was embarrassing to be a newcomer, because people, they'd talk bad about you. Jack would talk bad about you. If nobody else, a friend of ours would talk bad about you. He's dead now, and he died clean. You know, especially if you went out and came back, you had to stand up. And we have any newcomers here within their first 30 days? Please stand up. You know, and it was embarrassing, because when you messed up, everybody knew. It's not like there were, you know, thousands and thousands and thousands of meetings. 10 years after Bob came to the only meeting, or 11 years after Bob came to the only meeting, I came around and there were maybe 20 meetings. 10 meetings in Southern California and half a dozen meetings in Northern California and onesie twosies elsewhere. And that's all there was. And you knew everybody. And if somebody wasn't around for a few weeks, you knew what they were doing and you knew what was going on. And chances are you went to their funeral. You know, until you quit going to funerals. You know, there are a lot of funerals. You know, today it's a much more viable, much more dynamic, much more vibrant and alive thing. You know, we come into places and there's a real fellowship all over the world. I don't know if it blows Bob away as much as it does me. I'm sure it probably does, as I can come someplace and sit in a regular NA meeting and see more people in that regular NA meeting than were active in all of NA when I came around. You know, I'm sure that's magnified with Bob. And probably he doesn't go to too many meetings today that don't have more people actively involved in that meeting than were actively involved in the whole of NA. And I, you know, to me that's a great joy. I came around here and I went through pretty much what we all go through. The first thing I tried to do when I got here was disqualify myself. Yeah, but let me find a way out of this. Now, I came looking for help. I can remember going to my first meeting, and Bob was there. He probably remembers it better than I do. Probably not. I wasn't that important. I was just in there. My wife came with me. I was called on. I probably said something. Well, I may have a little problem here, and I don't know quite what. I don't know. That's kind of like what I was. You know, I did a lot of mumbling. I was sick. You know, I was all dressed up. You know, spiffied up with a suit and tie and everything else. And half the people there thought I was the police. The other half thought I was probably crazy and not a dope fiend. But, you know, I came in there and a few people said, you know, because I was 72 hours off of a run, you know, said, yeah, you know, and welcomed me. And someone said, you never have to use again against your will. And that was a wonderful experience. But as soon as I got my foot in the door, I started looking at the differences. I started going, oh, I never did that. Because people were talking about, you know, having been in Folsom Prison. And I was just this 23-year-old kid, never been busted or nothing. Just used drugs every day for 15 years. You know, that's all I was. I mean, they're talking about armed robberies, and I never did that. I just nodded out and missed things like the man landing on the moon, or, you know, I was in Monterey, I don't remember a thing. You know, too loaded. You know, I missed my teenage years. You know, that was the story of my addiction. But I come in here and I look for the differences, and people would talk about quarter-size holes drilled in their head, and, you know, after the shock treatments, and they talk about the mental hospitals, and they talk about the jails, and I kept moving further and further back, you know, disqualifying myself, and you know, I had an attitude adjustment, you know, a 2x4 upside the head type attitude adjustment. And I got to a point where I had to claim my place in Narcotics Anonymous. And instead of being around here checking out Narcotics Anonymous, you know, I had to claim a seat. That's my seat, and I'll fight you for it. I belong here. I don't care if you accept me. I don't care if I really fit in. I don't care if I have a bad enough story. I don't care if I did enough dope. I don't have any more choices left. It's either this or die. And that's my chair, and I'm here. And I see people make that kind of commitment. I see people make that kind of a stand about their recovery, and I think that's pretty much what it takes. Jump in this thing with both feet. What do you have to lose? That's an interesting question. You know, I thought I had all this shit to lose. I didn't have nothing to lose. You know, I didn't come here with nothing. Part of the problem was once I've been around here a while and got out of trouble a little bit and, you know, got my life back together, then I started thinking I had something to lose again. It was harder to surrender. It was easy to surrender when I crawled in kicking a habit because I had nothing to lose, because I had no answers. One of the problems I've struggled with over the years is thinking I had the answer. Somehow it seemed like the first step was easier when I was more desperate. Today, when I have to admit that I'm powerless over my addiction and my life's becoming manageable, I'm going, whoa, man, I don't want to do that. No, look, can't you tell? I mean, I've been clean 20 years. My life's not unmanageable anymore. Yeah, right. Those kind of lies keep me in pain. Those kind of lies keep me in my disease. Those kind of lies will send me right back out the door. And yet I lie to myself. And I lie to myself. And I lie to myself. After I got through that period of disqualification when I first came around, the next thing that happened is I started feeling good. And it was great, man. I'd got done with the worst of the kicking, and, you know, I had maybe, a month or 2 months clean, and it was almost like not using was a new drug. And it was wonderful not having to do all those things I had to do, not having to kiss up to the connection, not having to start the day in the hole and be fighting a losing battle every day, all day long. You know, that's kind of what my using was like, starting in the hole and fighting a losing battle every day, all day long. Not having to do that felt so good. It was almost like a new drug, and I got high off of it, and I loved it, and I got excited. You know, I don't see one out there. We had a little white booklet. We carried it. Bob talked about carrying one in his pocket. He probably told me to carry one in my pocket. I carried one in my pocket for 2 years. Every time I went to the bathroom, I pulled out this little white book and read it. You know, that's what I did in the bathroom. That's what you're supposed to do in the bathroom. Read recovery literature. That's what I was taught. And, you know, I don't know if that sort of hokey stuff works or not, but, you know, I'm still clean. So evidently some things work. And I still say, take one of these. Put it in your pocket. Don't go anywhere without it. Every time you get a chance, open it up and read a little bit. Read one section. They're short. They're short sections. If you don't read real good, we'll get you one on tape. Get yourself a Walkman. Instead of putting, you know, finger-popping music in it, you know, put recovery tapes in it. Oh, I didn't know you could do that. Sure. They have all the literature on tape. Well, you know. And, you know, that's great. After I got to that feeling high on this stuff at 90 days, I had all the answers. I've read that little bright book so many times, I had it memorized. And I'd listen to every meeting. They'd say the same things. You know, and I memorized all that stuff. And, you know, I was proud to let you know that I knew all the answers. You ask me any question, I would give you the right answer right out of the little white book. And it was wonderful. And you know, I'd talk of it. I didn't have any real understanding of it. I can remember saying stuff like, you know, I'm not willing to use anymore. You know, I had no idea what it meant. You know, using was not a matter of will. Staying clean was a matter for me of using not being an option anymore. At 4 months, the feelings hit. I'd had the drugs out of my system enough, they'd worked their way out of my system enough, where I stopped being medicated so much, and some of those reasons that I started using started cropping up, and I'm going, oh shit, what's all this stuff? I remember this. This is why I use. And it was a tough time. And at 6 months clean, I was going, oh my God, it's not the drugs. It scared the hell out of me. You know, because I thought that if I came around here and I stopped using, everything would be wonderful. Magically, all my problems would disappear. magically my family situation would take care of itself. Magically my working situation would take care of itself. People would discover me and everything would be wonderful. I always wanted to be discovered. Didn't you always want to be discovered? I was waiting to be discovered. I was looking for someone to discover those wonderful characteristics about Greg and take care of me for the rest of my life, you know, without having put forth any effort. At 6 months, I realized that I was clean. You know, I hadn't been discovered. I was miserable. Nothing was happening. And I had, you know, another awakening. And it was kind of like, oh my God, I knew I was sick, but I had no idea. Oh my God, it's not the drugs. And I went through that. And as I approached a year, I went, oh my God, if I stay clean 2 or 3 more weeks, I'll have made this thing. And then I won't be a newcomer anymore. And I won't get any attention. And you know what? After I had him a year, I didn't get any attention for a whole year. Used to be they'd give me attention every 90 days when they gave out the chips, and they pat me on the back and say everything was okay, and it was great. Today, I mean, they give you a welcome chip, and they give you 30, 60, and they give you every month for the beginning. They give you a lot of attention, and it really feels good. I remember having to wait for my 30-day chip, and then I remember having to wait for my 90-day chip. There wasn't any 60-day chips. And then it was a whole another 90 days until I got a 6 month. And I remember the wait and how long it was between those chips. And I know that to get from a 90-day chip, from a white chip to a 30-day chip is a lifetime. And a 30-day chip to a 60-day chip is a lifetime. And the third lifetime you invest in this thing is between 60 and 90 days. I know that. But I remember how I felt. And I remember the pride. And I remember beginning to feel like I was worth something. And people would come up to me and say, you know, Greg, I've been seeing you around here. You know, how long have you been clean now? And I'd say, and I'd tell them, and they'd say, you know, after you've got a little more time, I'd really like to have you speak at this meeting. And I go, wow, man, me. And that's nice. And I don't know if they ever really intended that or not. But, the people were there for me when I needed them. Right after a year, I went through this thing about going, boy, I'm glad that's over. Now I can get back to living like a real person. And I started changing some of the things. I went to over 500 meetings my first year. I'm a firm believer in 365 and 365. 90 and 90 was not enough for Greg. I was taught that you go to meetings daily. I was taught by the people who were there when I got here. This is what you're going to be doing. Get used to it and learn to enjoy it. If you don't do this, you're not going to make it. It was real simple. That's what I got taught. There wasn't any room for misinterpretation of that. Do this, things are going to be okay. Don't do this, you're going to go back and live the way you were living, except worse. And it's real simple. I hated my life. When I get honest about how my addiction was, it was miserable. I hated being who I was. I hated living the way I had to live. I hated myself. I did not plan to be a dope fiend. I can remember vividly going, my God, look what's become of me. Look what's become of me. But anyway, I think we all go through pretty much the same things. If you're tired of the way your life's been going, you have an opportunity to change the way you live. I'm a firm believer that the way you live determines the way you live. And if you don't like the way your life is going, you got to change the way you live. Either you've stopped yourself and realized your life's becoming manageable, or somebody else has stopped you and realized that your life's becoming manageable and put you off in a treatment center going, we're going to slow this sucker down. Slap him upside the head. See if he hears something this time. Somebody's made a decision that your life's become unmanageable. Somebody's convinced that you ain't doing too good in the living department. Something's rotten in the state of Denmark, as Shakespeare would say. Or you wouldn't be here. You have an opportunity to change the way you live. You have an opportunity to take a good, long, hard look at the way you have been living. If you don't like the way your life is going, change the way you live. We propose a real simple way to change the way you live. There are thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of people running around outside treatment centers and jails living this way, who will testify that this way, 99 days out of 100, or maybe 100 days out of 100, depending on who you talk about, is better than that way, than the way it used to be. Now, some people, I heard people say their best day, their worst day using clean is better than their best day using. And I don't know if that's true or not. I've also heard other people say that, you know, 99% of my day is clean and better than my best day using. I don't know, but it's close either way. And those are pretty good odds, you know. I heard enough people tell me that they had changed, that it was possible for them to get clean, that they never had to use, that their life was better, that I started believing. I came here and I didn't even know if I was an addict. I knew I couldn't keep going the way I was going. I knew that I hated the way my life had what had become of me. And I was given an opportunity to change. That's what this program did. It was an opportunity. For those of you who are living here, either voluntarily or against your will, sooner or later you're going to leave here. And you have an opportunity to change. I suspect the folks here way down deep are on your side, even though it probably seems like sometimes they're not. I know for me working in this business somewhere else, I was on that side. Seemed like we had an adversarial relationship sometime. But we're all working for the same thing. We all want to live better, to have a better life. And together we can. I don't know where you live. I don't know what the details are of where you come from. But I know you come from pain. I know you come from self-hate. I know you come from fear. I know you come from loneliness. I know you come from death. And you got to show them. If you're wondering about what you ought to do, you might consider making a commitment to do what Bob said. To try this thing one time, for real. Just one time, for real. And we're not talking about going out there and I'll go to a couple of meetings to check it out. Do it for real, one time. Do it like it said. Get a sponsor. Work with that sponsor. Try. Try for more than 6 months. Give it a real try. And see what happens. I am convinced, and I have bet my life, that if I do that, and if you do that, everything will be okay. I bet my life on Narcotics Anonymous. And, so far, so good. Between us, we've been betting our lives on Narcotics Anonymous for 52 years. So far, so good. I hope that, in addition to learning about the program, you stick around long enough to learn about the love affair. To learn about the love. To learn about the friendships. To learn about the very special relationships that we can have with each other. To learn about those special times when you can sit with somebody and touch spirits. And really make a difference in each other's lives. And really make your life mean something by touching another life. And really letting somebody else's life mean something by letting them touch your life. There's magic here, but it's not that magic I was looking for. It's not that person, place, or thing that would make everything okay. The magic I find here is the presence of a loving God. And I think that's all Bob and I got for right now. Thank you.
That's for sure. Okay, it's your meeting. It's open for discussion.
Yeah, I'm Frank. I'm an addict.
Hey, Frank.
It's really a privilege to listen to both of you. I picked up over there sitting down. You're in the book. Because I was part of the book. My wife proposed to you in jail. That's too coincidental. But when you said she only found the only meaning in the world, and I knew that that's in the book. Your story, too. I remember the chair, somebody kept holding the chair, it's your chair, the prescription drugs. But I have a question. You guys got a lot of clean time. Two questions. Do you still have a sponsor?
Yes, I have a sponsor.
Yeah. I was looking for another answer. My second question is, do you ever get any urges anymore?
No, I don't get no urges to use. I have great respect to drug addiction. I don't have a problem with using because that's not an answer to nothing.
But an urge?
Not really. I mean, maybe a fleeting thought about some new things that might be on the forefront that I have not used. You know, how our mind gets to traveling at times, you know, like, I wonder what that was about, you know, or what was in that, you know. There are always going to be drugs in this AA. My greatest conflict is probably that I'm going to do with some other type of madness.
Yes.
Other madness. You know, because we're predisposed in many ways of, we still have a character that is an addict. It may manifest itself in many ways. The fact is, once you find that you leave, you're not using, you find that you're still an addict. And that's the part which you have to deal with, that addiction, when you're starting to have to deal with that part of who you are. And you carry that one with you. That's part of our identification. When we talk about we're an addict, we understand and say the true nature of our disease is all-encompassing. It's not just some little piece of something that we stuck in our body.
There's also a degree of jealousy. Like, I only came into this 12-step thing 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. I'm messing around a long time. I was clean 10 months when I did it, which was a miracle for me. 10 months without an institution or anything. I was really surprised at that. But I relapsed. And, you know, there's a degree of jealousy. I mean, I don't think jealousy is the right word. Well, maybe it's I'm feeling sorry for myself. Gee, I wish I would have came into the program in 72. I could have relapsed 3 times and still been clean 18 years, you know. You know what I mean? So there's a degree of that.
Well, we have to start where we are. The other part of that, we always look back at what we didn't do or should have done, rather than to live in the now and the presence of now, and learn how to enjoy the now. See, we're so into yesterday and tomorrow that we forget to enjoy what we got right now. We have no tomorrow's promised anyhow. Yesterday is damn sure gone.
Yeah, what if's a dirty word. What's that? Don't shoot on yourself? Is that something like that? What ifs are like that? And you're asking about you have urges. I have all kinds of urges. I had a using dream about 2 years ago. It was the last time I had any kind of. And it just kind of surprised me, but I dreamt that I used. It had been years since I had any real conscious thoughts of using. There came a point in my recovery where I quit questioning. And I believe it's a point of acceptance, at least with the first part of the first step, where I quit wondering about or worrying about whether or not I was an addict. When I quit questioning, when I quit struggling and fighting those internal battles, well, maybe I can, maybe I can't. I just gave up. And from that point on, I really haven't had a lot of urges to use. But that didn't happen my first 30 days.
My name is Charles and I'm an addict.
Hey, Charles.
Appreciate what you all did for me. I'll go out here tomorrow. I've been here for 30 days, 5 days a week, that's 35 days altogether. First time in 25 years, I have 35 days in a row. It was like a shot in the arm for having you all here. However, I have been the last couple of days feeling pretty good about recovery. The first time that I really am serious about staying clean once I get out of here. Why, I don't know, because I've never been clean. I don't know what clean is, but I want to give it a shot this time. Especially since I do have a little son. Although I know I have to do it for myself, I want my son to see me for the first time sober so that he can say, well, I want to be like my daddy. And to be like a daddy, that's about something, not about like a junkie all the time. That's all I have to say. Well, I'm ahead.
Hey, John.
Appreciate y'all coming out tonight to share. I learned a lot. I learned a lot from you. Past 22 years since now, man, I relaxed too a couple of times. I still ain't know what the fuck that was about. Well, I knew I was I meant I was out for drug addict or alcohol, you know, shit like that. But I ain't want to follow the step. Not only the step, just wait, I was clean for 8 months. I still had my addictive attitude, my behavior. So I wasn't following my program right away. And like what Frank was saying, something like jealousy. I was like envious because I'm looking at myself trying to get it all at one time. Like, I just thought, just like you said, I went in that meeting thinking, oh, now I ain't used shit, you're coming my way. Mm-hmm. Nah, he was like that. Don't work that. I had to work. I said, well, I know what I gotta do now. I get out of here and I'll be next week. And, so I'm getting older and younger now, and I gotta just do what's right now, you know, so I can live a joyful life, you know.
Thanks for sharing that.
My name is Chris, and I'm an addict.
Hey, Chris.
Hey, Chris.
I'd like to thank both you all in New York for coming here tonight. What you really spoke about with the mixture of the cake and the way doing the steps really hit home. Because I'm the type that if it says put in 4 eggs, I put in 5 or 6, you know. Oh. I want to do it my way all the time. And now I know my way doesn't work because I'm back here again, I relapse. You know, so I know I have to do it the way the directions say to do it. And it's going to work that way. Because I've made cakes before. If I do it the way it said be done in directions, the cake comes out fine. You know, so I'm going to do the steps this time the way the steps are supposed to be done and everything will be all right. And thanks for having me share.
I relapsed, and even this time being in treatment, I was thinking about maybe I could just go a couple of meetings. If I do it on my own again, I'm very glad you fellas came in tonight. I'm going to try to see what happens. You know, just going to try. You made it sound a little sensible. I'm going to try it and see what happens.
That's what you do.
That's all I'm glad to share.
Is there anyone else would like to share?
I just want to say you haven't forgotten that you you told me to call you tomorrow, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Give you a call.
See, that's part of the key. See where the key is? See, just little things like this here. Get your directory, have some numbers, and get involved in the process. Because the only person you're doing it, you said you don't do it for son, sister, brother. They don't think, hopefully you're doing it for you. And if you do what's right for you, and you start treating you good, you're going to treat others good. Okay? First, it's got to start for you. So, meetings become very important without the excuses. You know, hey, we come miles tonight, you know, in the rain, you know, and I could think of 1,000 reasons why we shouldn't get out in this rain. I couldn't find not one reason that what I was using not to get out in that rain. But when I was using rain, sleet, snow, or whatever, you know, no mountain wasn't high enough that I couldn't climb over. You know, no river broad enough. I was going. Well, so recovery should have to be the same way. As much dedication you was using, probably going to have to be the same amount of dedication applied here.
Hi, I'm Michael.
Hi, Michael.
I didn't get a chance to share the meeting last night, so I got to hear my voice because I don't hear it for myself. With the gravity, I can relate to you a lot, you know, this is your message. I was in the meeting last night, and there was just like one space left. And I stuck my chair in there because I paid for that seat, and I kind of found it. And I thought it was already late on that day. Doing pretty good out there. I've only been out there 6 days and just left at 3 a.m. So, what's related to talking to Frank? I've been worried about my program so much and working my program. Last night I had an experience where I didn't have a good meeting, so I helped this guy on the road. He's broken down. I helped him out. I got a gas and stuff. When he was done, he offered me a beer, and I was like, no thanks, I'm in the cover. And I went home and thought about my night. I said, it wasn't a good night. And I said, damn. I turned that beer down without even thinking about it. But instead of thinking about cravings all the time, I was just thinking about working the program. So I relapsed like 3 or 4 times, but I never wanted to work on the program. You know, today I want to work the program. So I'm going to share.
Mike?
Yeah, Mike, I'm Adam.
Hi, Mike.
Well, first of all, I'd like to thank God for the privilege of being up here. Coming out of rehab, you know, 35 days, and I didn't learn a thing about the steps or the traditions. But I did remember these people up here in my counselor, they told me, when I get out of here, don't pick up. They told me 6 things. They said, don't pick up, go to meetings, get a sponsor, pray on a daily basis, stay away from people, places, and things, and help another recovering addict who wants help. You know, and I tried doing that by myself. Before I got a sponsor, I went out and tried going on. When I left here, I was looking for a wife. I wanted to get it. Finally, I went and got a guy, and I asked to give me some directions on how to work through these steps. And, you know, with my ego, I asked him to be my temporary sponsor, you know, because I had reservations, you know. And he's still my sponsor today, the basic guy. He gave me the proper directions on how to stay clean on a daily basis. And I still need him today in my life, you know. And that's what they, I think God was talking about, the therapeutic value of one addict helping another. Man. And like I hear people share, it's like the Adam bottom, you know, I mean, that's it, man. Therapeutic value, man, you know, like this. It's the ultimate weapon. That's it for me, the ultimate weapon. This way.
I've never been in this facility, but I was a Seabrook. And when I was there, I had this very cocky attitude. But when I went there, I asked for help, you know. I just wanted them to help me to stay clean. I didn't know what to do when I got on the outside, but they also told me to make a meeting first day out. So when I left, that's the first thing I did. And in that NA meeting, you know, the thing that touched me was that there was an enemy in the room, and a person I didn't really like, and she was the first person I saw with at the top of the steps that she helped me. You know, that was the first time I knew what I was doing. And sitting here with these people, man, listening to y'all, it brings back those feelings that I felt 15 months ago. Yeah. You're my grandson, but you know, I'm grateful that you've given me my spot. Recovery is truly a gift from God to this evening. I needed a jump like this tonight, you know? My life is unmanageable and overweight, and sometimes I make myself crazy, you know? But I'm only trying to get better. But sometimes the ways that I'm going is driving me nuts, but I choose to stick and stay. I choose not to give up anymore. Every time I gave up and I used my own devices, I got more pain. You know, so before coming to this meeting, I thank God for that pain I had earlier today. Because that was a test of strength that I had to face, you know. And I don't mean it necessarily in the form of a drug. I mean life on life's terms. If I want to get better, I got to stay this way. I can't step back, you know. And it doesn't go just as far as a drug today. And I'm learning that every day in recovery. It's not about a drug anymore. It's about how I'm going to make him better, you know? And he gets better a day at a time. You just got to work it. Just got to work the steps. And I need to hear that for myself. I need to work the steps on a daily basis. I need to pray to my God on a daily basis. You know, and it takes practice. Practice makes perfect. You know, yeah, I fall short. I forget to pray to my God. I forget to thank him. But every time that I don't do it, oh, he lets me know. And I start to do it again. It gets better a day at a time. It never comes to you, oh yeah, I wanted it overnight too, you know? But it gets better a day at a time. And everybody in this room is a proof of that. We can recover, not as I can, we can. That's all I got. Thank you.
Okay, we've come to that time. There is literature on the table. Take it, it's yours.